You're tuning in to another OI episode, an Offside Hockey Talk podcast with Jamie Anstey. And what a doozy I have for you guys today. My guest has played over 880 games in the National Hockey League. He was drafted by the California Seals in the 1975 NHL Amateur Draft. Played with the Washington Capitals, where he scored 50 goals. Also played with the Capitals and scored 60 goals. He might have had one of the best dusters in the National Hockey League in the 1970s, Mr. Denny Marouk. Dennis, thank you very much for joining me on another episode of the OI with Jamie Anstey. How are things with you?
Everything's fine. COVID-19, I guess that's about it.
Whereabouts are you residing? Are you still in Ontario, Canada?
Yes, I'm in London, Ontario.
London, Ontario.
That's it. Yeah, about a couple hours from Toronto. So I'm here with my fiance, and we're enjoying it. So
would that be the same lady that I met when you were here in Halifax last?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
This is all new. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome, man. I hope the best for you. I hope.
Yeah.
I hope the very best for you.
Three times a charm, I guess. Yeah.
So you're a 60 goal man. So maybe did you add that to the conversation when you first? Hey, I scored 50 goals. Then I scored 10 more to make 60 the next year. Was that part of your winning that lady over, saying you scored 50 and 60 in the NHL?
I would never do that or say that. We hit it off right off the bat.
Awesome, man.
Matter of fact, it was online.
We met
online, and I drove from Toronto to London to have dinner, and that's where it all started.
Awesome, man. Do you miss doing the charity things? I know I don't know how many years ago it was when you were here in Halifax last, but do you miss doing the charity? I know we've talked to Rick Five and Brad May, and I talked to Andrew Jackson, who is part of the Jackson events, and it's a terrible time. A lot of the alumni, Dave McElwain, Al Iafredi, who are part of the charities, aren't playing hockey right now. So how are you dealing with not being able to give back to, say, Hockey Helps the Homeless or the Heart and Stroke, where you were involved here in Halifax? How do you feel not being able to do all that stuff?
It kind of hurts the charities, basically, because they're not able to do the events and raise the funds that they desperately need it for the children and all that for these charities. So we're just, as any other player, we're just kind of waiting to see when the next. I know that I hear some things are starting to brew up a little bit. I've got a few golf tournaments that I've been asked to coming in July there. So, but it's frustrating the fact that we do a lot of different charity events for, you know, Easter Seals, Heart Stroke, you know, Sick Kids, Special Olympics and all that. And we just love giving back, and we're just hoping everything, this COVID-19 can be controlled and everybody gets their vaccines and we'll be able to continue on with a normal life. I think that's what everybody's praying for right now. But we got to be patient. There's no doubt about it. I'm at that age where I got to be careful, and I'm a frontline. I'm a diabetic, so I got to be careful.
I'm glad you're now being able to take part in the golf charities. I'll get into one individual, as you just mentioned, about golf, but golf is a social distance activity, which is great. Right. It's unfortunate that charities can't, or sorry, hockey games or hockey charity events can't be played where they're in the hockey arena. But it's good to still have that golf charity and Jackson events and whichever charity or organization you're part of. And you can't forget Red Seal or Easter Seals, which another big charity in Ontario. I want to mention Dale. We unfortunately we lost Dale there. Mm-hmm. Right around April, was it last year or maybe 2 years ago? He rang the bell in April during COVID. Right. So that's the biggest thing I take out of this year with losing Dale. I'm close to Dale as far as the Heart and Stroke. Can you just talk about Dale? And you talked about the golf charities and stuff. I know you've golfed with Dale. So can you just maybe had a positive story from Dale Hawerchuk?
Well, I've golfed with Dale. I've done hockey events with Dale, and the greatest thing with Dale Hawerchuk, he's just a gentleman on and off the ice. There's no doubt about it. He's when this all happened, his situation, I had played in a pro-am golf tournament in the National in Toronto golf course, yeah. And Dale had his group from Barrie, and I was asked to play in this other group. We had a local pro on each team, right? So we were there about an hour and a half before the event, and we sat and talked for a good hour about things that are going on, about family, about things. What are you doing? How are you feeling and all that? And there was nothing came out of Dale's mouth about how sick he was. It just seemed normal. And so to a lot of people, that didn't know, it was kind of a shock, what happened to him. And, he's just a great competitor on the ice, but just a wonderful human being off the ice. It was just great for me to get to know him, being living in Ontario and doing events. He's in Barrie, and I've been in the junior team. They have a golf tournament too. I've been to that one. And, he's just a fun guy to be around. Was a fun guy to be around with, and we certainly will miss him at events and stuff like that. There's no doubt about it.
So Heart and Stroke would have taken part March before last year. I think was the last event. You were here when Dale was here. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I got to drive him, and you're right. You hit the nail on the head. He seemed – Barrie was out at the time. He coached the Barrie Colts in the Ontario Hockey League. And
right.
Yeah, he's just a true gentleman. Are you – do you have any connection with Hawerchuk Strong? I wanted to mention that, too, for the viewers. And maybe you can shed some light on Hawerchuk Strong if you're part of that.
Yeah, they've got a – I've got my t-shirts and my sweatshirts and all that. And, mm-hmm. And
awesome, man.
Yes, I'm part with the Dan Lancoin that takes care of all that for that. Well, he does for Ledzy Strong, and then Eric does the Hawerchuk. So they're it's a wonderful thing to be involved with. A lot of people, think about it. You say, Dale's gone. There's no way Dale's gone. You know what I mean?
The legacy continues now with Hawerchuk Strong, right?
So. Yeah, Hawerchuk Strong and son Eric and all that. Anybody that would like to get on board and, donate some money, whatever it is, because it's a great cause.
Awesome, man. Let's get into your hockey career. How did it all start? I know you played with the Toronto Maribyrnoz, and you played your junior hockey and minor hockey in the Toronto area. Just tell the viewers about your hockey career, how it started, and you did play in the WHA there for a little bit. How was that transition from the WHA into the NHL?
Okay. How much time I got?
as much time as you want, Dennis.
No, this is your show. I started years old and grew up in Toronto. Started house league, as a matter of fact, and then played minor hockey with La Toronto. They call them Shopsies, minor Bantam Marlies, and Junior B. And then played about 8 games when I played Junior B with the Marlies during that time when I was with Markham Waxers Junior B. I got traded in junior before I got to sign a deal with play with the Marlies. I was traded for Mark Howe. Mark Howe was drafted by the London Knights, midget age, and Marty Howe, Mark's brother, was already playing for the Marlies, junior A Marlies. The Gordie Howe and Colin Howe wanted their boys on the same team. So London and Toronto had to make a trade, and Toronto offered first Bruce Boudreau, and Lee Belong wanted myself and another player, which he ended up getting. Made the trade of myself and Larry Goodenough and another fellow by the name of Steve Lang. The three of us went to London for Markel, go to Toronto. That's how I got to London. That's where I played 3 years in London. And then I won the I was rookie of the year for the junior league. I also won most valuable player my last year, which was the Red Tilson Award in the OHL. And then I got drafted by California Golden Seals. First pick in the second round. First pick in the second round, which is 21st overall. And that's why I took the number 21. It was available because I was 21st pick overall. So there you go, a little trivia. And then I went after that year, first year of the team, moved to Cleveland, the Cleveland Barons, from 76 to 78. And then after 78, there were some tough times there in Cleveland. 78, 79 merged with the Minnesota North Stars.
And that's what I thought. I just double checked. I thought the North Stars were WHA. I thought
no.
Like Marty Howe or Mark Howe, Hartford were a WHA team. Then they merged into the NHL. So I thought for some reason California Cleveland Barons were WHA. Yeah, but you didn't play in the WHA.
A lot of the people think the Cleveland Barons were a world hockey team, but no, it wasn't. With Crusaders or something like that, but I did get drafted by Cleveland in the WHA the same year I got drafted by the NHL by the California Golden Seals, but I wanted to play in the NHL, so I decided to do that route. And then in 79 the Cleveland and Minnesota North Stars merged, and we had so many players that Lou Nanny traded me to Washington Capitals for a first round pick. I played 5 years there in Washington. That's when I had the 50-60 goal seasons. And then I got traded back to Minnesota in 83 and played till I was 1989, retired. There it is.
I want to show you a little something that I got here, sir, if you can see it.
Oh, that was a perfect card, yeah.
There you go. They have a different Topps version and a different OPC version. So this version here...
Yeah,
this version here has the Cleveland at the logo at the top, Barons, and look at the duster, man. You wore it best alongside Landon McDonald. Talk about Ken Reed. He talks about hockey cards all the time, and he's mentioned you in many conversations. I'm gonna send this interview later to Ken Reed. Shout out to Ken Reed. I know how close he is with you, and. You're in the conversation all the time as far as legendary mustaches with Landon McDonald, Joe Quenneville, and yourself. So yeah. I pulled that out this morning knowing I was going to have a conversation with you. So
it's a little, I'm a little
beautiful
gray,
right? Dust, beautiful
little,
mustache.
A little gray right now. Yeah, they say I was in the top five in the NHL with that that duster. But I can tell you a story a little bit about that. I don't know if you remember a pitcher, relief pitcher for I believe it was Kansas City Royals.
Raleigh Fingers? Al, he had a mustache
no,
as well.
No. Al Habrowski.
Oh, wow. I'll have to look that up.
He was the crazy, I look it up, crazy Hungarian or Ukrainian, and he had the Fu Manchu, and I had a little bit of it. I said, I'm going to keep it. I like that. I like his action.
Awesome,
he walks around the mound really quick and fast, does his feudal things. And I said, I'm going to keep it. And that's I'm going to remember having it be the big guy, Al Habrowski. I don't know how long he had a career, but that's what I did. I saw him on TV. So there you go.
Speaking of the Washington Capitals, there's a gentleman that was part of that club, Tom McVie. I had this gentleman on during Black History Month, Bill Riley.
Mm-hmm. Bill Riley.
Any good stories, anything good from the days playing with Bill Riley? He's here in the Maritimes, a good Amherst kid, and he made it to the NHL. Do you one other thing? Do you believe black players? I know when Willie O'Ree started playing, and when there's another gentleman by the name of Marsh, I forget his first name, but also Bill Riley. Do you think they were treated fairly in the 70s and 80s? Like I know it got better after Willie O'Ree and. We all know like the Herb Carnegie stories, but how do you think they were treated in the 70s and 80s? Like, do you think they were treated as fairly as the white hockey players?
That's a good question. I don't know because I haven't had a time to sit down and talk to them. I did play with Tony McKechnie, played against Grand Fury. Tony McKagan was on my line when he played at the North Stars. So, and he didn't seem to get too many issues. I think it years ago was a different story where it is compared to now. I think it's fair game for everybody. You're a talented individual, whatever race you are. You can play in the NHL, you can play in baseball, you can play in football, whatever, basketball, whatever. And I think that's where it is now. Maybe years ago, it may be a little bit of different. There may be some stories or things been said that were uncalled for. But I think right now it's pretty much, it's wide open. I believe it's, if you're talented, you can play at any team and whatever race you are.
No, you're absolutely right. Look at the American Hockey League, Ontario Reign. They've got Khalil Thomas, Smith Pelly, and Quinton Byfield, three black players on the same line. So
there you go.
That's something I wanted to ask, is to see if the black players in your years of playing were treated as equal as the white players. Like, I know it was a different time, and it's different now with equality and the Black Lives Matter and all that stuff. But that's a conversation for another day. Is there one particular moment in your NHL career that stuck out the most besides your 50-goal season and your 60-goal season?
Scoring my first goal in Toronto and Maple Leaf Gardens. My family and friends. I scored an exhibition goal, but I mean, for my first NHL goal, on a regular season was in Toronto, November, when I had my parents, my brothers and sisters, family were all there, and friends. So it was pretty exciting. I don't remember a lot of the goals. And when someone asked me, well, do you remember your 60th goal? And I said, no, we had to pull it up on YouTube. and then I remember when I saw the film, but other than that, I would be my most, the first goal I got, and then of course playing the two All-Star games, and especially the one that I did score 60. That the All-Star game was in Washington D.C., and my parents were able to come down and watch that. And it was pretty pretty special time.
Especially Maple Leaf Gardens now, it's on the same ground as Ryerson University and a superstore. Actually, I saw a picture one day of somebody going. Yeah, so one day I seen a picture and someone was going, I don't know if the cereal aisle or the pop aisle, whatever aisle it was, and they actually pointed down toward where center ice was at Loblaws on Carlton Street. And I don't know if you ever noticed that. Have you ever been in that facility after they turned it into Ryerson or the Loblaws? Have you been in?
Cool. Yeah, I've skated in there in different events, and I've had friends have rented. You can rent the ice as well, and it's up in the grays. That's where they put the rink, in the grays. And so if you think of it, they had the golds, the reds, the blues, and then the grays. So they put the rink up in the grade level, which is kind of neat, like the fourth level, I think fourth elevator row. But they kept some of the old structure of the walls and that pictures from the building are still there, and of course, it's the big supermarket down on the main street. It's pretty cool, pretty neat. If you ever get a chance to see it,
So you only played, unfortunately, 888 games. It's people ask me every day, like, which guests are you gonna have on? Who are you trying to target for guests? And a lot of the time, it's players that played over 1,000 games, which should not be the ideal reason that you should get somebody. You should always target the players that played 1,000 games. Like, I've had people on that have played 41 games, and they don't have to be in the Hall of Fame either. We like to hear hockey Hall of Famers. And the point what I'm trying to say, Dennis, is like, you played 888 games. The connection I have with you is from Heart and Stroke through different charity events. But there is some people that say, like, get Dennis. He's a great storyteller. And that's why I get these individuals. They tell a great story. They've played in eras that I didn't grow up playing in. So I'm interested on hearing their story. But you only played 888 games. When you, I believe it was later in the 80s. When did you know, like, your season or when your playing days were coming to an end? And was there ever a chance that you may have thought, hey, I can reach 1,000? But was that even a thought in your head? Like, you played 888 games. During your last couple of games where you thought it might have been the end, were you disappointed that you weren't able to get 1,000? Like, is that a big deal to a lot of people, playing 1,000 games?
Counting playoffs and exhibition games, I've played over 1,000 games.
Okay.
I think at that time, I shattered my kneecap in 1988, blocking a slap shot. And it took about 6-7 months to put it all back together, mended. And I came back. It wasn't really. I didn't feel 100% with it. And you know, I thought about it, and I said, "Well, I played 14 years. Maybe it's time to move on and let somebody else." Could I have still played? Yes, I could have still played. There was a certain circumstances during that time that I don't need to say. But I just looked in it and figured, well, should I work out another 6 months and see how strong it gets and then continue on playing a few more years? I just decided at that time it was time for Dennis Moreau to move on and let someone else have a chance to play in the National Hockey League.
Online, they only say 922 games, including playoffs. So HockeyDB, I play the HockeyDB game quite a bit when I can with Ken Reed, and it's unfortunate. Like, I don't know if it's updated, because some players have said the same thing. Like, I've played over 2,000 games if you include playoffs and exhibitions. But hey, here's a stat that. Go ahead, Dennis.
If you're saying that, I was told that I was too small to play in the game, and for a guy that was, I had to deal with a lot of adversity, a lot of it, and. You know, you look at a guy like Marcel Dion and stuff like that, you know, what are they going to say? He was too small to play any game?
Look at Marty St. Louis, right? Prime example. How well did he play? He won Olympic gold too, right?
So. Exactly. So, you pat yourself. I pat myself on the back for the hard work I had to do to make it to the NHL, as well as to stay as long as I did, basically, and had some pretty good years and things are still popping up about from it. And I also came out and I wrote a book too with Ken Reed. So
we're going to talk about that shortly.
How many players have done that? So, you know, I owe a lot to the game of hockey. There's no doubt about it.
You can still score 3 goals on one shift during a Heart and Stroke Foundation charity weekend. So I remember you played 1 year in Moncton. I'll just give you a little story here. Billy Smith was in Moncton for Heart and Stroke, and he was a player. There's a lot of guys, and some people say too, oh, like, why is Heart and Stroke, you know, bringing in these guys, these alumni? Well, it's not about the age. It's not, you know, no. We don't always want to see the Mike Padanos. Everyone wants to see Eric Lindros, you know, the John LeClairs, right? 1 year, Marty McSorley was drafted first in the Heart and Stroke Foundation charity weekend.
Right, right.
And Ray Borg. And it's funny, I was talking to Billy. I was watching Billy, and he's moving around. He was a goalie. Billy Smith, the goalie. And he was, man, he was flying around on the ice, loving it.
He liked playing out, Those events are great. You know, even if you don't get drafted, whatever, I know there's sometimes you're only allowed to draft so many players, right? Mm-hmm. And the extra players they put on different teams. But I think what it comes down to is a lot of these players enjoy being involved with the teams and that and who we get to meet, because they're giving up their hard-earned money to donate to these charity events. And it's just, we understand that, and we want to make sure that they're having a good time with us. And so we do tell stories. We have fun when we hang out with the team for a couple of days and you gain new friendships. I love coming out there
100%,
and stuff like that. And it's just I'm looking forward to it again. And I still skate and play. So I'm going to do it till the good Lord says I can't. So I love coming out east. People out there are a lot of fun. My sister lives in Halifax. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to come out there and see her and all that.
Hopefully hockey for the homeless happens sometime soon as well. Then we can, right. I can ask the people involved, hey, contact Denny Marouk. So I was going to mention the story. We were in Moncton, and Marty McSorley, I believe, was drafted at number one. And me, Ray Borg, Rick Middleton, and another player were standing there. And we're like, wow, like Marty got picked first. And it was great. Like I could talk. Five or six alumni, I was talking to them, because everybody in the ballroom were in line up to get Doug Gilmore's autograph. I'm like, Ray's like, this is awesome. Nobody's bugging me. Mike Krushaninski's there, and another alumni. Hopefully, they'll be on the OI here very soon. And Dave McElwain, and we've had Dan Dost, another amazing individual that I know you know, Dan Dost. But man, just an incredible thing that Heart and Stroke's doing, and Hockey for the Homeless that take part in Halifax. So we truly want you back. Let's talk about the book before we run out of time here. Just talk about your book. I'm going to just pull up the name here. Denny Marouk, The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man. Just talk about your book, how it all started, and where can people find the book, Dennis?
Well, I get the book on Amazon. I got books still that when I do Perfect. These events, I do bring them, you know, probably 20, 30 books. Yep. Some people like to buy and purchase them when I'm there, and yep. and usually donate it to the charity, whatever, or you know, give to the teams. But it started in Toronto, where a fellow that I was doing some promotion with, he had said to me, you should do a book. I go, why would I want to do a book? I got more.
That's everyone's response, right? You know, hear that across the board.
I want more things to do in my life, and I'm not ready. And so,
is this gonna take up my golf time?
Yeah, no. He said, you got to talk to this guy, Ken Reed. Yep. And I didn't know Ken was on the show, and you know, I met Ken in a golf tournament, and he come up to me and says, I'm Ken Reed, and I'd like to get together with you and talk a little bit about your career and da-da-da. So a few months later after that golf, we met, and we went for lunch, and it was like a 4.5, 5-hour lunch. And he recorded a lot of things that I said when we'd start telling stories and things about our life, post-career, all that kind of stuff, and very personal stuff that we went into. And then he called me back after he left, and he said, would you like to do it? And I said, well, I got to think about it. I really don't know for sure. We met again, another 4 hours of long stories and all that. And then I said, okay, Ken, here, I'm going to write some stuff. You're going to write, and we're going to be co-authors, okay? And he said, can you write? I said, well, I'm going to write and tell stories. You're going to clean it up. And so I did. We did that, and I said to him, this is how I want it done. I said, I'm 60 years old. I scored 60 goals, and I want 60 chapters. He goes, wouldn't you? 60, 60, 60. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty good way to look at it. And then we came up with the title. And the reason why the 60 short chapters is because I read a lot of James Patterson books, pretty much every one of his books.
John Grisham, James Patterson. Unbelievable writers, yes.
And that's how I did the story. If you read other biographies of athletes and that, you know, they're telling the first chapters, 30 pages or 40 pages, and they're telling them when they started playing hockey. Well, my book started out, I'm on a cruise ship, a service boat out in the Gulf, servicing oil rigs, and I'm a deckhand, and I'm up there with a captain. There's two deckhands and a captain, 160-foot supply boat we're taking out to the oil rigs, Devon Energy's oil rigs, and the captain goes to me, all right, your turn to take over the helm here. I go, what do you mean? I don't know how to drive this boat. And we're in the Gulf, and he says, captain goes, I gotta rest. I said, here, just get on. It's everything's all pilot, right? So just watch what you're doing and keep it on. And then a storm came. a massive storm was coming. The waves are coming way over the top where I was, on the top part of the boat. I was getting kind of scared, and I woke him up. He said, "Don't worry about it. It'll go by." And I ended up handling it. So that's kind of my first chapter in the book. And people are going, "You did that? You really did that?" So it makes them read on. Well, what's the next story? When's the next story? So I kept, that's how I wanted to do it, with short chapters. And the hardest part about writing that book was, and I'm not shameful of it all, was my personal post career, where I just about took my life. And I felt it was best to be in the book because of being a professional athlete. It's not all peaches and cream where people think it is. And that the athletes do go through certain things in their life just like normal people do. So I thought it was best to be in there, and it turned out that it worked out really well for the book.
Do you have any, Walter, we'll talk about two more individuals here. Walter Gretzky, who we just unfortunately lost, and the very entertaining Eddie Shack. Can you provide the viewers a cool little story about Eddie? He was an entertaining individual. Do you have an entertaining story about Eddie Shack?
Yeah, I got it. Eddie, kind of crazy. Clear the track. Here comes Shack.
Yeah, right? And you better clear the track, because here comes Shack.
But I mean, I did a bunch of, when I moved back to Toronto in 2008, I lived in the States for 35 years and then moved back to Canada. So it was 2008. I did a lot of golf tournaments, a lot of charity events, because I was new to the town, because I'd been away for so long, and they were looking for new people and different people, so different athletes. So it worked out pretty good. So I was a couple of golf tournaments, and I want to remember with Eddie, he wasn't playing, but I was driving. I was playing, and he was in my same car. It was Eddie and I. And so it was at Woodbine Country Club in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And there was a little creek going along, about a 5 or 6 foot creek. And, Eddie always wanted to look for balls, he wasn't playing, but he wanted to look for golf balls. So I hit one of my drives, were close to the creek, about 10 feet. And he walked over to this 5 foot creek, and he got on the side and he fell in. He fell in right up to above his waist, and he couldn't get out. He couldn't get out. And we were trying not to laugh, and he's yelling and screaming.
How many pops did he have?
Help me out. And Lou Francis said he's on the other side of the creek. He was playing on a different hole, and he saw it too. And, we're trying not to laugh, but we finally got him out, got him in the clubhouse. And he didn't have any clothes, so the clubhouse manager bought him some clothes, and he went and got changed. And that was a pretty good story at the dinner later on. But, that's just Eddie, That's what he is. So Eddie was...
Well, that's how it's supposed to be. The story is... Because now Eddie has passed, and you look back at that story, and that's a story that can help you remember about Eddie, right?
Yeah, I do, and there's other stories, but I like that one. And then Mr. Gretzky, I played a lot of games with the NHL alumni in Toronto here, and they made Walter as our ambassador. Anywhere we went to play an event, unless he was not feeling well or couldn't make it, he was there with us. And he'd be kind of like he was our leader, very much so. And we'd stop for coffee or Tim Hortons or whatever bus we were driving to any city. And it took us an extra hour or so to get to where we're supposed to be, because he would go in and talk to every soul in Tim Hortons. Hey, hi, how you doing? What's your name? And then we'll get an autograph, get pictures, whether they're young or whether they're old. He would talk to just about everybody. And I think a lot of people respected that they knew who he was. He was definitely an icon. I just thought he was just a gentleman because of that fact. And then in the dressing room, he'd come in the dressing room, and if there was an empty pop can or on the bench, or it wasn't put in the garbage, he'd pick it up and put it in the garbage. Or extra marker, he'd pick them up, markers, and put them in his pocket. He made sure he picked up certain things in the dressing room that players didn't pick up. He was always just a neat, very neat gentlemen about dress room, respecting the dress room and making sure you keep it clean. You walked in, it was clean, make sure you leave with it clean. And I always remind myself of that when I'm in a dress room and I'm doing getting ready or stuff like that. And then there was a trip we went to the All-Star game in Ottawa, and we're on the bus, and he was saying, boy, how long we got to keep going on this bus? And I just kept saying, it's another 4 hours, Walter. It's another 4 hours. So every time we would meet in the event while he was still alive, I'd say, Walter, we got another bus ride, 4 hours, let's go. And he'd come up and give me that look, you know, what do you mean? We're not going on no bus. So that's kind of the thing with Walter. But great family. I do a lot of games with Brent, who's a police officer in Brantford there. Brent does a lot of NHL alumni games as well. I don't see Wayne as much, but more Brent. Yeah, so great family, great people, and certainly Wayne was just an outstanding hockey player that I got a chance to play against throughout my whole career, which was awesome.
Cool little Walter Gretzky story. Mm-hmm. He would mow the lawn. He would maintain the lawn around the church, and he'd be out there for hours, and the people in the right. church like, wait, hey, do you want to eat? Like, do you want any drinks? Anything to drink? And they had to like drag him into the church, yeah. either for the service or whatever was going on. And he's definitely one of the greatest hockey dads ever to live. Like, I know kids got their fathers, and but I'm not sure the word to use here, but every father, I believe, should be like Walter. Everyone should look what he did with Wayne and Brent. I've met Brent many times through hockey.
He worked on a farm, hardworking farm boy. That's what he was. And, I think he respected life. I think that's what Mr. Gretzky did. I think that's where you got to look at his whole scenario, that he enjoyed life. He enjoyed living, and he enjoyed, God rest his soul right now. But he enjoyed every time. And then of course he had the stroke and all that kind of stuff. But other than that, he was just a great man to be around. There's no doubt about it. We'll certainly miss him. There's no doubt about it.
100%, Dennis. One last question. How, and you might have had many other great coaches that you've played for. How great was it to have Herb Brooks as a hockey coach?
Herb had a hard time being a hockey coach in the NHL. I think, doing that, the miracle and all that with the U.S. team, he was in control. And I think he had a little bit harder time in the NHL with the professional players. Okay. There's another fellow you can say, Dave King. I know
I
was
Calgary Flame, I believe.
Dave King, I was with Team Canada World Championships, and Dave King was going. He must ask me a million questions about what's it like being a professional athlete playing the NHL and all that, because he wanted to know how to coach him. And I think Herb was in that same kind of group that they lasted. And then when I was in Minnesota, Herb and Lou Nanny worked together. And nobody ever thought that was going to happen, that Lou Nanny and Herb Brooks are going to work together on the same team. And it did work for a little bit of time. But he was just, Herb Brooks was just, I got to know the family and that. And also the same kind of topic about Herb Brooks, I got to meet, I lived in Aspen, Colorado for 8 years. So I got to meet Kurt Russell, who played Herb Brooks in the miracle on ice. He played Herb Brooks, and he did a wonderful job parlaying Herb Brooks, and it was just a wonderful. But Kurt Russell loves the sport, loves hockey. I talked to him for about an hour and a half at a pub in Basalt, Colorado, and I think I got in 5 words. All he talked about was hockey, and how great it was to meet the family, the Herb Brooks family, and how great that man was to the United States hockey. And that certainly right there, that event that happened, changed the whole outlook of the American hockey players. changed everything. And look what it's done. Look at a lot of American hockey players are so successful, and they still get and still producing more American hockey players. There you go.
I forgot to flip my page over. I apologize.
No problem.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Dennis. You played in the 70s and 80s, and now obviously the 2000s, the NHL is totally different compared to when you played. You don't have to so much compare like the 70s and 80s when you played to today's NHL, but do you watch the NHL today? And if there was rules or is there anything that you would change in today's NHL that I know, like the clutch grabbing? Like I watched the 1980 All-Star game. And I watched the Montreal Quebec Nordiques brawl. There's a lot of old games on TV, mm-hmm. and I wish some of the not so much the clutching and grabbing, like some guy is hooked onto the guy and then went for a sleigh ride, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to obviously see that in today's NHL. But is there something that if Bill Daly or Gary Bettman came to you and said, "What's one thing, Dennis, you'd change in today's NHL? What would that be?"
Well, I think it's because they're so young and so fast and strong, you know, totally different than when we are. Our game is a little different. Ours is more tougher and grinder and dirtier and chippier and all that kind of stuff. But if they had came to me and asked me to, which I think a lot of people have said at first was they didn't expect that these players to be so big and so fast that the rink should be bigger. It should be more Olympic.
Maybe they should be like the KHL, the bigger ice service.
Yes, they should. When they built all these new arenas, they should have built the bigger. It should have been a bigger. That would have been my number one. But whether they can do it now, probably not. But I would go back to the center red line, bring that back, because I don't like the fact that the puck goes in my end, and a player can stand at the far blue line. And we can throw the puck all the way up to him, and he can just chip it in. It's not an icing, an offside, or any of that. To take away the plays and things that are done at the neutral ice area by doing that. And I think if you've asked a lot of other older players, they would probably say a lot of it go back to the red, put the center red line in, where they got to make plays and go with the two-line offside and all that. They got to make some pretty good plays coming up through the neutral ice area. Now they just throw it lengthwise, one end of the rink to the other, and they keep the game going that way, but there's not much going on in the neutral ice. And that's what I would say. That's what I would be going back to the center red ice. That would be mine.
Yeah, and the video replay is helpful. I think a lot of the offside replays, like they had to go back to watching the video for offsides. I think that's slowing the game down a little bit. Look at Tim Peel last week. He was caught on the mic saying what he did in that Nashville Detroit game. We had Theron Fleury on last week, and he mentioned, well, they didn't have that back in the day. Didn't have that back in when he played. Referees were saying whatever they wanted, even in your era. So,
oh yeah, play with you. I think,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and that's that. Maybe we'll have you on just to talk about the 70s and 80s and how hockey was actually played back then. But like sure. The Tim Peel, I did want to get into this. Like I mentioned, I totally forgot to flip my page here.
Okay.
But the Tim Peel incident, and you know, it's a 200 by 85. That's the dimensions of a hockey rink. If they go back to, if they go to a KHL size rink, maybe that opens things up. I do find a lot of the video, like they're going, spending 10 minutes figuring out if it's offside or. Yeah. Look in 2004, like the Flames were robbed of a Stanley Cup because Jelena's goal was in. Tampa Bay goes and wins the Stanley Cup. Brett Hall's foot was in the crease versus Buffalo. Apparently, there was supposed to be an increase rule back then. I guess that didn't matter. You know, video could have been used back in the day. Look, did Wayne Gretzky deliberately high stick Gilmore in the face? Cravey Frazier. Till to this day, we don't know the real story, but I say if they did have video, they would have shown if Gretzky deliberately did it.
Right.
Like I believe, and I hopefully you agree with me on this, Dennis, should a follow-through that hits someone in the face that causes blood, even though it wasn't done on purpose, should that still be a 5-minute major? Or 4 minutes for high sticking?
No, I don't think.
When if it's not the okay.
No, I think it's when you're taking a shot and your stick follow through, you have control. And you may have your head down. And if a player's coming out, player's the one, he's got to protect himself. He's got to get out of the way, or because you know that stick's coming or whatever. He's got to protect himself. That shouldn't be, no. No, of course, with the high sticking above the shoulders when you deliberately try to hit somebody in the head, that's definite. Definite penalty. There's no doubt about it. I think that's just the way it's got to be. I mean, the officiating, as you were saying, you know, they got the mics on. They never had the mics during our time. They got the mics on, and there was those things being said during that time. Who knows? I don't know. I didn't hear it. My concern was playing the game and doing my job on the ice. And if I got a penalty, then if I didn't like it, I squawked a little bit at the referee. And sometimes I got 10 minutes for squawking too much. To do what he did, I feel sorry for him because he'd been around for a long period of time. And I always say that, and I'm a believer that the referees would always even things out. If one team had,
you see a lot of phantom calls too nowadays.
Like, 4 minutes, four penalties the first period, the next team's going to get in the second period, two or three penalties. Do they try to even it out? No, I don't think they try to. I just think it happens that way. I think today you're not going to see games where one team is going to have five penalties and the other team is going to have zero. That ain't going to work. It's going to be two or five or three and six or whatever, how it's going to go. But that's just the way it is. And then there's more five-on-threes today's game than in our. We didn't have too many five-on-threes. I think the referee was afraid to call another penalty if he already called one on the team to give the other team, two players up on a power play. I think they were afraid to call penalties. They don't care now. There's so many five-on-threes, maybe one or two or three a game. So that's what I think about the referee. And they're all doing a great job. There's no doubt about it. The game is so fast and so intense and that it's you can't see everything. There's no doubt about it. That's why they got two of them out there. And still, even then, it's hard to catch everything. And so, that's just the way it is. That's the way the game is.
It's hard to believe, too. A lot of people say you should factor in game management. Like, if one team gets eight penalties and the other team gets zero, maybe that team that got zero just were disciplined.
Right.
And the team that got eight, they just weren't disciplined. Like, the people have talked about the Tim Peel situation, right. And they said, oh, well, he's obviously on the mic saying that, oh, I'm going to call a penalty to even it up. It happened. I'm part of a junior team. It happens all the time. The back referee will come to the bench and say, next time I'll call it to make it even.
Right.
Just
right,
to try to, you can never make both coaches on each side of the ice happy.
No,
right?
You're right.
So
the ones are winning are happy, and the other ones are sad. Losing are sad. But on that video, you said I had almost 800, almost a point a game. If we had video back in that time, I would have probably had 1,000 points. Because I know I squawked a lot of times. A lot of goals that I scored were not counted. They say, oh, hit the crossbar, but it went right underneath the crossbar. And if it hits it underneath, it comes right out. I go, wait a minute here, that was in. Oh, no, it wasn't. It hit the top of the crossbar and came out. Well, it wouldn't come out that way if it hit the top of the crossbar. It would go straight up in the straight in here. So that's what I'm saying. Video at our time would have increased my point. There you go.
Well, the guy in the gray is the guy in the nosebleed at Maple Leaf Gardens. If he saw it go in, then it was definitely a goal. I'm gonna get one of your books, Dennis. I had bought your book.
Okay.
A friend of mine, who's part of the Hockey Helps the Homeless,
right?
Bought it, and a lot of my stuff, like a lot of my memorabilia, gets sold off for charity, and then it helps bring in some money for Hockey Helps the Homeless and Heart and Stroke. But I hope Hockey Helps the Homeless and Heart and Stroke come back. I hope you're part of the next wave that comes in. And I'm gonna send you a message, and maybe you can personalize the book. So, where again can people find your book? You mentioned Amazon.
I think there's some of the stores still, but Amazon, yeah, they're still being out there. Okay. Amazon.ca. I'm both in the U.S. as well. But what I'll do is you send me your address and I'll send you a book. All right.
Okay. I don't want you to wander out in Ontario. I know the numbers right now in Ontario regards to COVID, so I don't want you to wander out of your home if you don't have to, right, Dennis?
No, it's just to the I have some here, and I end up going to the LCBO. I like my drink my wine and then the red wine and then the grocery store. I don't go too far up.
What's your go-to red wine? Mine's a Malbec. How about yourself?
I'm a California cab guy, so there you go.
Wow,
California cab.
We don't have I find I have relatives in Ontario, in Ottawa, and I find because they have an LCBO, but then they also have the beer stores, two separate places. Right. I find in Ontario the LCBOs don't have the same product as the NSLC here in the Maritimes has. So, it's unfortunate because, like yourself and many other alumni, have mentioned about products. And I know Nick Caprio's got a product out called Little Buddha. It's a spirit, and also doesn't come in Halifax. So, unfortunate.
There's a wine that's called Crusher. You know, Krzelinski Crusher, which starts with a C. C-R-U-S-H-E-R. It's about $17. It's a great bottle of red wine.
Okay. I'm gonna check that out. Maybe that might be in Halifax.
So yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I know you have great lobsters out there.
I wish I could send you a lobster. I know you have connections. I know you have a sister here in the Maritimes,
so
she'll send you some Clearwater lobster.
Anytime I want lobster, it's my sister or my good friend Steve Walton, who puts on a lot of charity games. He's got a place there, Moncton, the Tipsy Tomato.
Yeah, he resides in St. John, New Brunswick, I believe. He had some events here with Teresa, I believe it was.
Yeah, we're just waiting.
Really cool people.
I'm just waiting to hear from him regarding getting some events going. You know, when they start opening up that travel and stuff like that. Yeah, so everybody gets their vaccine.
Sorry, were you ever part of the? I know I've said I was going to let you go, but were you ever part of that old timers hockey challenge? You remember that?
Steve had, it was called the old timers, wasn't it? Weren't they called?
I'm not sure who ran it, but I wasn't sure if you were part of the, it was just called old timers hockey challenge back in the day. I wasn't sure if you were part of that.
Steve Schott and LaFleur and all those guys.
Yeah. Yvonne Cornwaye, Gump Worsley, Johnny Bauer, Lanny. Billy Smith.
Yeah, they lost. They lost that sponsor, I guess, and they had to fold. I did a few things with them many years ago. Yeah,
I just saw online. Why I bring it up because I just saw online a whole old timers hockey jersey with you, Billy Smith, and Gary Lehman. So I wasn't sure if that was still going or not. I was going to promote it, but obviously that's not still going.
We do a lot with Andrew Jackson, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show.
Yes, Jackson events with Dave Ellis Kidd and Bob Clark.
Yeah, I do a lot with Andrew as well. Yeah. There you go.
Awesome, my man. Thank you very much for joining myself here on the OI. We'll have you on very soon. And is there one particular NHL team you're hoping to win the Stanley Cup besides the Capitals?
You said it. Besides the Capitals. I got to vote for Toronto, no doubt about it. I live in Toronto now. I'm from Toronto, live in London. So I've always cheered for the Maple Leafs. There's no doubt about it. Number one team, of course, is the Capitals. And the number one two team will be the Toronto Maple Leafs. And hopefully one day, I think everybody wants the Toronto Maple Leafs to win the Stanley Cup because of the Toronto will just go crazy. There's no doubt about Canada will just go crazy. So there you go.
What do you think Toronto's chances are to make it to the final two for Lord Stanley?
They stay healthy. I think that's the key. If they stay healthy,
we've got some goaltending issues right now too, right? So
Campbell's not bad. He seems to be doing pretty good.
As long as he stays in the net and doesn't play the puck, right?
Yeah, that's all right. Goalies happen. Look at Smith there in Edmonton, right? Same thing. No, they're I think they'll get it all figured out. They just need to be consistent. And I think if they continue, they lost a bunch of games. A lot of the teams have caught them. They just need to be consistent going in there and play strong defensively, because they got players going to score and produce. There's no doubt about it. They got toughness. They got maturity. If they want to fight, they got guys to fight. The back end, a suspect has not been back end, meaning defense, has not been real steady, I guess, in and out. But they rely a little bit on the goaltending. But if they can get all those things worked out, they get a good chance. There's no doubt. Look what they did to Edmonton, that 3-game series. That shocked everybody.
One goal in 3 games. Now they got four goals in 4 games for Toronto Maple Leafs.
And that happens. Sometimes teams just don't have a hard time beating another team, where they go in against someone else and they just destroy them. You know, that's what it is. Look at Toronto and Ottawa. Look what Ottawa's done to Toronto. You wouldn't think that would happen. You think Toronto would just blow Ottawa right out, but it's turned right around. Ottawa's played them pretty tough. But then look at them against Edmonton. They seem to have Edmonton's number.
Ottawa's a tough building to win in. This, Dennis, happens all the time. You mentioned the Capitals. So as interviews go on, thoughts come to my head, but this is my last word.
Okay.
Speaking of the Capitals, I believe Ovechkin's 175 goals away from beating Wayne Gretzky's record. You're Capitals. You played with the Capitals. Do you think Alexander Ovechkin can surpass Wayne Gretzky in his 892 goal total?
I believe he can if he stays healthy. That's the key thing is health. Because he's a strong man, he's still got a great shot. What do you get? One or two last night? He's got 18 or whatever goals. And then now he had a slow start.
And COVID's not helping either, right, Dennis? Now with this shortened season, we can't have any more shortened seasons. And you're right, more healthy seasons. He can easily surpass it.
He'll catch Dion. I'm pretty sure he'll catch Dion this year, and then next year he'll catch the next guy in front. But I think the key thing is the way the game is today, it's perfect for him to break the record. It's perfect. Are the goalies different than Wayne Gretzky got to shoot against? Yes. The goalies today are bigger.
They barely move because the pads weighed too much from being soaked.
They're so tall and so strong.
That's why you scored 60 goals. The guy didn't want to go down.
That year I had 60, he had 92, and I could have had 80 goals that year. That's just the way it was. Yeah. All those, if they had video, I would have had 80. No, I'm just kidding. I could have had 75, 80 goals that year. Yeah, it was one of those years. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Okay. We're gonna have you on again very soon. So take care of yourself.
You too.
And thank you for joining me here on the OI.
Anytime.